The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. First of all, an article that was published by the Associated Press on the 8th of January entitled A First for Reclaimed Kyiv Cathedral, Christmas in Ukrainian, by Hannah Aryova. Kyiv, Ukraine. Back in Kyiv's 1,000-year-old cathedral for Orthodox Christmas, hundreds of worshipers heard the service in that church in the Ukrainian language for the first time in decades, a demonstration of independence from the Russian Orthodox Church. Richly decorated with golden icons and panels, the cathedral, part of the complex known as the Monastery of the Caves and a UNESCO World Heritage Site, put up a video screen outside for the overflow of worshipers, despite the frigid temperatures. Overlooking the right bank of the Dnieper River, the cathedral and monastery complex has been a pilgrimage site for centuries. And for the first time in the 31 years of Ukraine's independence, the service there was held in the Ukrainian language. Ukrainian army troops in uniform were among those singing well-known Ukrainian carols. Ukraine's government on Thursday took over the administration of the revered Kyiv Pechoresk Lavra from the Russian Patriarch, and allowed the Ukrainian church to use it for the Orthodox Christmas service. The move highlights the long-running tensions between the two, exacerbated by Russia's war in Ukraine. It's a first victory for Ukraine, said Oksana Abuakel, who hailed it as a significant step in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church's efforts to cut ties with Russia after it started the war more than 10 months ago. This is the first time in 300 years that there's really our own service here. Every person feels this joy. It is a victory for all Ukrainians. Ukrainian Culture Minister Alexander Tachenko said Thursday that Kyiv Pechoresk Lavra had been taken over by the state after the lease of the Moscow-controlled church expired on December 31st. Tachenko attended the service Saturday. It's an amazing moment. Previously, this place on Ukrainian territory within Kyiv has been linked to Moscow. Now we feel this is ours. This is Ukrainian. This is part of the Ukrainian nation, said Alex Fezyek, who attended the service. The Metropolitan Ephanias, the primate of the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, spoke not just about Christmas, but delivered a political message about the war. As a nation, we sought to live peacefully, having a good understanding with all our neighbors. But the enemy meanly and treacherously broke the peace and invaded our land, shedding blood, sowing death, and wanting to destroy our statehood and our very Ukrainian identity, he said during the service. Those who held us in captivity could not endure our achievements and our success, he said. The devil's malice and enemy prompted them to make war, but they are sure to be defeated. After all, the truth is on our side. Natalia Levshina said her husband couldn't come to the Christmas service as he is fighting on the front line, but she will send him photos of the service as it's very important to him. Originally from Donbas, she said she stopped attending the Church of the Moscow Patriarchate in 2014 when Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula and supported the conflict in the eastern part of Ukraine. Our emotions are running high, she said, barely holding back tears, describing her conviction that the Ukrainian church on Ukrainian soil should be independent from the Russian Orthodox Church. Our church must be synchronized with state policy. They must be one, Levshina said. Others in Ukraine have decided to distance themselves from the Russian Orthodox Church by celebrating Christmas on December the 25th. On Friday, the Church of Moscow condemned the Ukrainian plans to hold a service in the Kyiv Cathedral as an attempt to forcefully seize the cathedral by means of blackmail and misinformation of society. The next article was published by Religion News Service on January the 3rd and is entitled, "An Image of the Prophet Muhammad Ignites an Academic Storm," by Yanrat Shimran. A Minnesota University art history instructor who showed a treasured 14th century painting depicting the Prophet Muhammad's call to prophecy was dismissed amid a roiling controversy over Islamic representational art, academic freedom, and campus speech debates. The controversy first broke in October at Hamline University, a United Methodist-affiliated school in St. Paul, Minnesota, where the instructor, whose name has not been publicly shared, was teaching an online global art history class. The instructor gave students both written and verbal notifications that the image would be shown and allowed students not to participate if they didn't want to, according to a video recording of the class obtained by the student newspaper, The Oracle. However, one of the students, who is also president of the Muslim Student Association, complained to the administration, saying it was offensive and disrespectful to Muslims, many of whom believe Islam prohibits figural representation of the Prophet Muhammad. A month later, the school responded in an email to students condemning the instructor's decision as undeniably inconsiderate, disrespectful, and Islamophobic, according to an email from the Dean of Students. The instructor's contract was not renewed, and a spring semester class the instructor was supposed to teach was canceled. Meanwhile, the university, with an undergraduate enrollment of about 1,800 students, has been embroiled in a simmering skirmish over academic freedom and a debate about acceptable content in the classroom. A petition calling for the reinstatement of the instructor has collected some 2,000 signatures. The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression has called on Hamline to reinstate the instructor. A university spokesperson did not respond to emails or phone messages. The painting in question, a prized medieval painting included in a manuscript written by a 14th century Muslim statesman and scholar, illustrates Muhammad's call to prophecy by the angel Gabriel. It shows Gabriel pointing to Muhammad, instructing him to recite God's words. Muslim scholars have rushed to defend the painting, which is owned by the Edinburgh University Library, saying it was intended to extol Muhammad, not to denigrate him. To make blanket statements that this is prohibited, especially the image in question, is absolutely wrong, said Ali Asani, professor of Islamic religion and culture at Harvard. It shows illiteracy about religion. That was the point Mark Berkson, professor and chair of the religion department at Hamline University, tried to make in a letter to the student newspaper. Berkson's letter was taken down by student journalists who said the letter was further harming members of our community. While acknowledging that many Muslims today believe that visually representing the Prophet Muhammad is forbidden, Berkson wrote in his letter, Muslims have created and enjoyed figural representations of Muhammad throughout much of the history of Islam in some parts of the Islamic world. Reached by Religion News Service, several Muslim scholars said pictorial representations of Muhammad are not typically controversial in an academic setting. I tell students we're going to be looking at Muslim devotional art, said Oman Safi, professor of Asian and Middle Eastern Studies at Duke University. I know know some students may not have seen these before, and some may have seen or been told it's not done, but it's a historic part of the tradition. Safi said he doesn't give students the choice to opt out, as the hemline instructor did. The aversion to any representation may be in part due to the offensive cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad published in the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo in 2015. In that instance, two Muslims marched into the offices of the magazine and killed 12 Charlie Hebdo employees. But there's a long tradition of devotional Muslim art created by Muslims to be viewed as expressions of piety. Christiane Gruber, a professor of Islamic art at the University of Michigan, wrote that historic representations of the Prophet Muhammad, his face sometimes veiled, sometimes not, can be viewed at the Louvre in Paris, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, and the Asian Art Museum of San Francisco. Through conflation or confusion, Hemline has privileged an ultra-conservative Muslim view on the subject that happens to coincide with the age-old Western cliché that Muslims are banned from viewing images of the Prophet, wrote Gruber. She also started a change.org petition to reinstate the instructor. University administrators, however, have defended their actions, suggesting that showing the image was hurtful to Muslim students. In a December 9 letter, Hemline President Fainice Miller wrote, "It is not our intent to place blame. Rather, it is our intent to note that in the classroom incident, where an image forbidden for Muslims to look upon was projected on a screen and left for many minutes, respect for the observant Muslim students in that classroom should have superseded academic freedom." Berkson, the religion professor at Hemline, said the university was not modeling critical thinking. "These students, like many religious people, do not know about some aspects of their own tradition," he said. "In this case, they do not realize how these images have been used in other parts of the Muslim world and are still used today. They have a particular perspective, and I honor that. But as an academic institution, one group's prohibition cannot be extended to everyone else." Now, an article from the Associated Press published on the 18th of December entitled, "U.S. Catholic Priests Are Increasingly Conservative as Faithful Grow More Liberal," by Francis X. Rocca. American Catholic priests are becoming more conservative, even as their flocks are becoming more liberal. U.S. Catholic bishops elected conservative leaders last month, continuing to resist a push from Pope Francis to put social issues such as climate change and poverty on par with the bishop's declared priority of opposing abortion. The U.S. hierarchy's orientation reflects the wider trend of an American clergy with values at odds with those of an increasingly liberal laity and a pope who has encouraged the questioning of once taboo subjects and leniency on some teachings of sexual morality. A spokesperson for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops declined to comment. Research on Catholic clergy by the Austin Institute has found that younger Catholic priests and priests ordained in more recent years tend to be noticeably more conservative than older priests on a host of issues, including politics, theology, and moral teaching. The Survey of American Catholic Priests has found that since the 1980s, successive cohorts of priests have grown more conservative, according to a 2021 summary report. Regarding the Church's prohibition of contraception, masturbation, homosexual behavior, and suicide, the impossibility of women's ordination to the priesthood, and the necessity for salvation of faith in Jesus, Each successive 10-year cohort of priests supports church teaching more strongly than the one before it. Those ordained in 2010 or later are the most conservative of all, and the least happy with Pope Francis, with roughly half disapproving of him, according to the Austin Institute survey. The Vatican didn't respond to a request for comment. People are looking for answers and stability, said the Reverend Daniel Hess, who was ordained in 2011 and is Dean of Students at Mount St. Mary's Seminary and School of Theology in Cincinnati. There actually is a treasury of teachings and of truths and of deeply Catholic content that is part of our inheritance that was not even shown to us or known, and it's sort of being rediscovered. So I think in some ways that leads to a certain traditionalism or conservative approach. While young priests hold on to tradition, Catholic laity have been moving in the more liberal direction. A 2021 survey for America magazine by the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate at Georgetown University found that more than 52% supported the ordination of women as priests, 62% said priests should be allowed to bless same-sex relationships, and only 38% were very or somewhat opposed to euthanasia or assisted suicide. The contrast is even sharper between young priests and their lay contemporaries. 35% of millennial Catholics have considered leaving the church because of its teaching on LGBT issues, the CARA survey found. American priests' gradual return to tradition started in response to the liberal ferment of the 1960s. According to the Reverend Paul Sullins, a sociologist at Catholic University of America, church authorities in the U.S. became stricter about ensuring that new priests assented to church teachings following the widespread dissent from St. Paul VI's 1968 encyclical Humanae Vitae, which reaffirmed the church's traditional prohibition of contraception. At the same time, thousands of American men left the priesthood in the 1970s to marry. These were more liberal, on average, than the priests who stayed, thereby producing a more conservative priesthood by attrition, Father Sullins said. St. Paul II, who was elected pope in 1978, tempered the modernizing changes that followed the Second Vatican Council of 1962-65 by reasserting traditional doctrine. He ordered investigations of U.S. seminaries seeking to ensure orthodoxy in the curriculum. John Paul also inspired a generation of young men to join the clergy, said Brad Vermeulen, a sociologist at the University of Texas at Austin, who has studied the 2021 survey. The Reverend Peter Hanna, a member of the Dominican Order from California, who was ordained in 2014, said that for many young clergy, John Paul II was a prophetic voice in the wilderness of modern secularism, an incredible inspiration and saint. Cardinal Robert McElroy of San Diego, a leading liberal among U.S. bishops, said Pope Benedict XVI's warnings against what he called the dictatorship of relativism in modern culture inspired many priests ordained in the past decade and a half to preach a faith based on definitive truths. The Reverend Benjamin Petty, who was ordained in 2019 and serves as campus chaplain at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., said, "Today's society has this aggressive sense of nothing's really true unless you make it up yourself." He added, "So the church in her teaching and her consistency and moral voice is this place of stability, place of security, place of safety to receive something good and old." According to the Reverend Ezra Sullivan, an American who was ordained in 2011 and teaches at the Pontifical University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome, the youngest U.S. priests are a postmodern generation disillusioned with the ideas of progress and religious pluralism that found favor at Vatican II. Instead of focusing on interfaith dialogue for the sake of social justice, these priests are more likely to stress the reinforcement of Catholic identity and the winning of converts, said Father Sullivan, author of Alter Christus, a new book about the priesthood. Such attitudes distinguish those priests from Pope Francis, views of whom vary sharply by age. Almost 80% of priests ordained before 1980 strongly approve of the current pontiff, compared with 20% of those ordained in 2010 or later. Nearly half of the younger priests disapprove of the Pope, either strongly or somewhat. What is remarkable is that these men, who were indoctrinated into total loyalty to the Pope, so easily dropped this loyalty when a new Pope was elected, said the Reverend Thomas Rees, author of Inside the Vatican, who was ordained in 1974. Now they are only loyal to the Pope if he agrees with them. Pope Francis has opened up discussion on topics previously deemed closed, including contraception, homosexuality, and priestly celibacy. He has initiated a global synod scheduled to end in 2024, in which clergy and lay people have raised these questions, among others. Cardinal McElroy, who was ordained a priest in 1980, said the Pope's willingness to allow for gray areas on highly contentious questions clashes with many younger priests' concerns regarding relativism. Father Hanna said the Pope has made waves that unsettle many of his fellow priests. There's a desire for more clarity, more stability, while we fully respect the office of the papacy, he said. Yet Cardinal McElroy said he doesn't think that ideological differences with their priest are driving people to leave the church, even if they change their parish to find a more congenial pastor. Despite their conservatism, young clergy say they don't emphasize such differences to their flocks. I didn't become a priest because I wanted to be a culture warrior, Father Petty said. I didn't want to be like, oh, I'm going to get up on the pulpit and convince all these 70s libs. The Reverend Nathan Rube, a president in Kansas City, Missouri, who was ordained in 2019, said, I'm not going to tell you whom to vote for. Father Rube supports the decision of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, opposed by a majority of liberals, including Cardinal McElroy, to declare objection to abortion their preeminent priority. I really don't know any priest at all who would disagree, Father Rube said. Babies in the womb are the most defenseless members of society. How can I help them if they're born into poverty, if they're not even born into poverty? Our last article is an excerpt from one published by the Religion News Service on the 15th of December, entitled, In These Polarized Times, Even a Prayer Could Be Up for Debate, by Adele M. Banks. In October, Christian churches together, an ecumenical group of Catholic, Protestant, and Orthodox Christians, gathered for its annual forum to address a topic that's plagued the church and society beyond it. Polarization. They sought to answer the question, who does Jesus call our Christian churches to be in a polarized society? But they found that polarization within their own ranks made it hard to move forward with a response. 2 months later, on December the 9th, they released a prayer as follows. In the power of the Holy Spirit that blows where it will, remove the divisions and historical inequities between Christians and in society, between those who strive to follow you and between us who raise this prayer. It reads, show us new ways to be your churches in these troubled, polarized times. Give us fresh vision to respond in love to a world consumed by hate and fear. Reaching prayer for words that might seem to outsiders to be relatively innocuous required some heated discussion. We did have challenging moments in that conversation about the prayer. I think because prayer is such a central part of our common tradition, Christian tradition, that there were strong feelings around how we should pray and how we should end the prayer, said Monica Schott Pierce, CCT's executive director. And so when that kind of came to a head, we decided to have a cover letter to explain the diversity of approaches to prayer. The letter, addressed to its participating churches, gave three options for ending the prayer. One, ashe, a closing used by some historic Black churches that is rooted in many African contexts. Two, in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, used in Catholic and Orthodox settings. And three, another ending chosen by the person saying the prayer. Since the meeting, after struggling over wording in the prayer, the organization has taken steps to develop new tools to address divides within its own network. Schott Pierce, a former CCT steering committee member who served for 4 years as the ecumenical officer of the Reformed Church in America, said letters and other statements on racism, poverty, and immigration reform have been produced by the ecumenical organization since its founding 2 decades ago, but they often take time and debate. There's a lot of conversation that leads up to the decision, and it often is a bit heated and challenging, but we do come to a consensus. A decision-making mode, she says, can honor all the voices in the room, with many perspectives across generations, denominations, and socioeconomic and racial backgrounds. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News, so be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.